Would you kindly turn this afternoon to Daniel chapter 10, the book of Daniel and chapter 10. Daniel chapter 10, and we'll read verse 2. In those days I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all till 3 full weeks were fulfilled. Verse 7. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men that were with me saw not the vision. But a great quaking fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. Therefore I was left alone, and saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in me into corruption, and I retained no strength. Yet heard I the voice of his words. And when I heard the voice of his words, then was I in a deep sleep on my face, and my face toward the ground. And behold, an hand touched me, which set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hands. And he said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand upright, for unto thee am I now sent. Verse 18, please. Then there came again and touched me one like the appearance of a man, and he strengthened me and said, O man, greatly beloved, fear not, peace be unto thee, be strong, yea, be strong. And when he had spoken unto me, I was strengthened and said, Let my Lord speak, for thou hast strengthened me. Then he said, Knowest thou wherefore I am come unto thee? And now I will return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I am gone forth to the prince of Grecia, shall come, and I will show thee that which is noted in the scripture of truth. And there is none that holdeth with me in these things but Michael, your prince. May the Lord bless the reading of his precious word. I would like this afternoon, by the help of the Lord and by the help of his gracious spirit, to try and interest you in this closing section of the meeting on some of the characteristics and features of this man that is called twice in chapter 10 of Daniel, a man that is beloved. In searching through the book of Daniel, chapter 10, we discover that Daniel has set himself for 3 full weeks. He has set time aside in his rather busy life to find out the mind of God concerning the future of his people Israel. And this really has gripped our souls this afternoon, that this man, so stately, so dignified, so noble, that the whole ambition of his soul was that he might understand what lay in the future for the people of God. Here is something that is a very rare commodity, even in the present day in which we live, to find a man, or to find any, who have a real deep interest to know the future of the people of God. It is a blessed encouragement that here and there we have found those who have a real, deep, genuine interest and burden concerning the well-being of the people of the Lord. And thus I want you to see that God really lays honor upon Daniel. Twice over he calls him a man that is beloved. Looking into the root meaning of that word called beloved, it is the word shamad, which really has 3 meanings to it that can be touched upon. It really means to delight in one. It means a thing of rare beauty. It means to covet one's presence. And think of the gigantic thought in relation to that, that God really found Daniel a man in whom he could delight, a man of rare beauty amidst all the pollution and corruption of Babylon, a man whose presence God genuinely coveted to have. Here is something that really must come in upon our souls, and not too quickly in our meeting, but we must apply it to our hearts and souls. Are we men and women whom God finds delight in? Are we of such character and nobility spiritually that God finds us as rare treasure? Does God really covet to commune with us? Or, says someone, that ministry is far too high for any one of us. We feel it in our own souls. But you know, my friend, in every epoch of dealings with God, with men, we find that every era gave its men. You remember the antediluvian period produced Enoch. And we remember the patriarchal period, it produced Abraham. And we remember in the time of law, it produced Moses. And we remember in the time of the kingdom, in settled conditions, it produced David. And the Gospels have produced its John and Peter and Paul and Stephen and all the others. And are we to understand this evening that God does not find delight in people? We want to answer to the contrary, that if the features that were seen in Daniel are seen in us, then God shall delight in us, and God shall find us objects of rare beauty, and God shall come down and show His presence to each and every one of us. We want you to see that He was not just beloved, but that He was greatly beloved. O Daniel, a man greatly beloved. What brought him? That is my first question this afternoon. What brought Daniel into this most remarkable position of favor? Not many men, in fact, very few men, have ever had this commendation from God to be greatly beloved. What and how and what made God make such a statement twice over about this man? Well, it wasn't because of one individual thing that he did. It is actually because of a pattern of life that he lived. And he lived it from the very earliest of his days. And he lived that same kind of life to the very end of his days. And possibly when we first hear of him, he is 18 years of age. And possibly when we last read about him, he will be nearer 100 years of age. And in those times from 18 until 100, he seems to be consistently receiving revelations from God. And when he is not getting revelations for God, he seems to be living them out in principle, in the private of his life. And so I want to show you, by way of exhortation, I want to show you the things that made Daniel a man greatly beloved. Now I want to show them in such a way that you might be encouraged. I don't want you to stand back and to say, I'll never get there, and there's no hope of me ever arriving there. But I want to show you that the things that are seen in his life are so simple and so straightforward and so ordinary. And yet, in those simple, straightforward, ordinary things that he did, he found the eye of God, he found the praise of God, and he found this commendation, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved. It is obvious, of course, that before the first time he comes upon the scene, it is obvious that somewhere, somehow, he had developed piety in his early days. Now, while it is possible to give Daniel all the credit, remember, somehow or another, somewhere or other, someone, his mother, his father, somehow or another, someone had imparted to him the early seeds of true piety, of true trust in God. And may we not commence his life without putting the real value and honor where it should be placed. Many a man does rise from obscurity, having no parents or connection or anything like that. But generally, people can go back to someone's prayers and someone's tears and someone's toils in teaching them the things of God. Now, possibly, most of the people in here owe a great debt to their fathers and their mothers and to their teachers and to their elders and to the preachers as well. Oh, my friend, there is a sense in which that verse comes home, how much owest thou, my Lord? But not only do we owe the Lord, we owe every man that has taught us the truth of God, and every man that has traveled miles and has labored and has sacrificed to put the things of God our way. Certainly we have responded, but isn't it blessed that they have taught us? And so, to really put the things square, Daniel possibly, or to someone else, his parents, his mother, I'm not sentimental, but he owed something to someone for putting into him and causing him to embody his early principles in his life. I could at that point just point out this, that none of the parents here should be discouraged. And none of the parents here should lose heart. You know, time is a remarkable healer in the things of life. And somewhere, somehow, by some means, God may yet touch those that have been problem children and have been a constant harassment and heartbreak to you. Remember this, you do your part and you can leave the rest with the Lord. You remember those difficult days in Moses' time when he was born, having a brother and a sister? And you know the difficulty of having children in those days? And yet, on the scene comes Moses. No one would ever have given anything that he would have lived a few days, and yet he lived. And his brother lived, and his sister lived, and what an exercise that was, and what a contribution to the testimony. A prophet in Moses, a prophetess in Miriam, a high priest in Aaron, what a contribution to the testimony. Wouldn't our hearts be glad if some of us took the gospel further than ever we've been able to do? Oh, keep at it and put and imbibe early piety into the young people. Not only so, but we're breaking in upon it now. His early piety, and we've given the credit where we think it may be due. But when he is taken down with the captives to Babylon, we see he's marked by non-conformity. Now I want to dwell on this, but not too long. But he's marked by non-conformity. You know, he had his name changed. And I think it's quite clear he had his nature changed. He was made a eunuch in the palace of the king of Babylon. And we remember he had his education changed. And all his food was changed. And everything was changed. And you know, my friend, he could do nothing about those things. He could do nothing about those things. He just had to submit to them. And yet, there came a day in his life when someone came in the door. And in the door they came, and in their hands they had a platter. And on the platter was a meal. And possibly nothing wrong with the meal, looking so luscious, so beautifully put on. And yet, Daniel discerned that this meal had come from the king's table. This meal had come from the king's table. And he discerned that before this meal was partaken of, part of it was offered in worship to the idols of Babylon. You know, for Daniel to have eaten that morsel of meat, that tasty dish, that Babylonian provision, it would not have denied the existence of his gods. But he would have confessed in eating it that there was another God. He would not need to have denied the existence of Jehovah. But in eating that dish he would have said, there is another God for by Jehovah. And Daniel would not break that covenant. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. And he refused the Babylonian dish because he did not want to defile himself. What does that mean? It meant that he did not want to upset his communion with his God. He didn't want it broken. He didn't want to go in before God with an embarrassed face. He is marked by nonconformity. Let none think that Daniel was anything else but a slave and a captive. And let no one think that Daniel could just do what he liked. The king of Babylon hired and fired at will. And there was nothing for these people to put thousands to the sword. And he knew the complications. And he knew all that was involved. And yet he stood, possibly just a young man, just in his teens,
He stood that day, and he would rather, he would rather just say no than to defile himself with the king's meat. May I appeal to every soul in this dreadful, corrupting scene in which we live. Remember what you're doing. Size it up well. Touch not these things that will defile you and break your communion and cause you to be embarrassed as you go into the presence of God. He breached Babylonian worship, and he breached all Babylonian courtesy in doing what he did. You know, he could have said, because millions were doing it, he could have said, we are far from home. We've no temple now anymore. We've no priesthood anymore. We've no sacrifice and set days and feasts. I'll just be as the others are. When I'm in Paris, I'll be a Parisian. And when in Rome, I'll be a Roman. And when in England and London, I'll be like the Londoner. Oh, my friend, what sad things are happening today. People want to get away from their own environment and the eyes of their brethren. They seem to take on a different coat altogether. Who are we living before? A handful of poor, puny men? Or are we living in the sight of the holy God of heaven? My friend, this young man, he lived before God, and he lived for God, and he wanted to please God, and he wouldn't conform to the rites of Babylon. And notice, he would not defile himself. He could not face God defiled. But then on the other hand, we find there's something else comes out in him. Not only his early piety and his nonconformity, but his gentle courtesy. His gentle courtesy. Oh, says someone, I didn't think that would come into it. Oh, yes, my friend. You know, a man is really not really anything unless he's gentle and courteous. I never thought that rudeness or vulgarity or crudeness ever assisted the truth of God ever. And you find that this young man, he's in good favor with the eunuch. And you notice he's of such a testimony that he can approach this Babylonian eunuch. And he can speak terms to him. And he can come into agreements with him. It says he was held in high favor with the eunuch. What does this mean? It just means this, that he wasn't going about arrogant, and he wasn't going about shouting the odds. He, my friend, was marked by gentle courtesy. He was held in love by the chief of the eunuchs. My dear young friends, and older ones too, if this applies to you, remember, the truth of God is not advanced by rudeness, and it's not advanced by arrogance. And the case is never won by anything that's ungentlemanly or discourteous. We see that he asks the man for 10 days. And then he has the suggestion of the pulse and water. You know, my friend, I don't think there was anything special in the pulse and water. I think God was in the whole business altogether. And of course, when they come out, what a difference there was on them. You see, he had learned to put God to the test. Oh, you know, God can be tested. He can't be tempted, but God can be tested. And so I appeal to you, this gentle courtesy that marks this young man, it seemed that it helped him in that particular case. His manners and his principles, they seem to go together. And notice, he has objections, but he has alternatives. Let me say this in passing. I cannot abide a man who constantly, in the fellowship, is always making objections. Let me hear every man's objection, but let that man have a spiritual alternative to the matter. That's it. Oh, my friend, it's easy to be an objector. It's easy, my friend, to stop the wheels going round, but it's quite another thing to have a word of wisdom for the situation that you are in. And so, not only objections, and he has that, but he has a spiritual alternative. Not only is he beloved for these matters that I've raised, but he is beloved of God because of his fidelity to reveal truth.
Says someone, what do you mean?
Well, when God gave Daniel a message, he conveyed the message just verbatim, right out. Whether it be that great king, King Nebuchadnezzar, or whether it be Belshazzar at a later state, or other kings, he communicates the message of God. You remember the two messages he had to bring to Nebuchadnezzar? One was a message of exaltation. He says, thou, O king, art that head of gold. My, that was to lift him up. That was to bring him up higher than any other king had ever been and shall ever be again. That was to bring him right up. You see, he had a message of exaltation, and he brought it to the king faithfully. He had another message to bring to the same king, possibly because he would not attend upon the poor slaves and serfs and captives that were brought back. And he brings a message to him. And he tells him that for 7 years he shall go out to the grass like the ox, he shall grow like talons, and his hair shall go down his back, and he shall be wet with the dew of night. And he brings him the message. You see, my friend, he brought him a message to raise him up. And because of his pride and arrogance and his unfeeling situation that he was in, God brought another message through Daniel, and he gave the self-same message to the man. Notice the great balance that's in the man's ministry. Oh, notice he just brings the message of God, and he tells the king without fear or favor. And of course the messages, they came to pass. Who will ever forget the message that Daniel brought to Belshazzar? Oh, you remember he had been out of circulation for a long time. It seems that the king knew nothing about Daniel, but the king's mother knew about him. And they send for Daniel, and when he comes in, oh, what a parading there is. What a bowing down to him there is. And if you can tell us this dream, I'll make you the third person in the kingdom. I'll never forget the first time I read that. He says, thy gifts be to thyself. Thy gifts be to thyself. He saw that all the ermine and all the gifts and all the palavras were cheap. Thy gifts be to thyself. What a message he brought as he unraveled that sight that was in that writing in the plaster of the wall. What a message to a man, to all my friend, if his knees knocked before he got the interpretation. How did his heart feel when the word of the Lord came in? This man was beloved because of early piety, because of nonconformity, because of gentle courtesy, because of fidelity to divine truth. You see, it's not something about Daniel's face. It's not the way he speaks. It's not the place he comes from. It's not the company he keeps. It's this whole thing working in all his life over the years, that God sees a heart that beats true to himself, and he loves God for God's sake. And he speaks for God because it's for God. And so, my friend, he's a man that is greatly beloved. He was beloved because of how he behaved himself in the midst of prosperity. I don't think there was ever a child of God that ever was raised so high in the world of men like Daniel. And yet, my friend, nowhere, do ever we read that people felt or he made them feel lower than him, or he made them feel slaves, or he made them feel beneath them. You know, my friend, even Ezekiel speaks about him and says, he was such a great man, Ezekiel says, and art thou wiser than Daniel? And possibly Daniel was only about 30 at that time. Oh, how he carried his prosperity. How he carried his prosperity. He wasn't carried away. You know, some people often say, I wish I had Mr. So-and-so's gift. You know, there'd be no living with the people. No living with them. God knows how to give out gifts. My dear friends, this man could carry it. This man was humble with it. The fact that God had endowed him, this man was humble, and he walked humble with God. Was that the only reason? Oh no. He didn't get through life without a few testings as well.
You remember the sly politicians, how they saw that he was favored more than the others. And you remember the pact that they made. And you remember the trap that they set. And you remember that they caught him praying to his God as at former times. With that window open, he wouldn't even have glass between him and his God. With that window open, and there he prayed as before time. You know, Daniel didn't change his habits because of the whims and because of the policies of people or the change or the wind of change. Daniel really set his heart to seek God, and his habits, my friend, were developed. They were ingrained in his life. And although he knew they were watching, and although they knew the trap was set, yet he still went to his God. Do you wonder that God called this man greatly beloved? My friend, it's a build-up. Do you see the build-up? And all through this man's life, he does the thing that's right by God. We had a man, we still have him in our country. He's possibly our most respected. We were discussing Christian or spiritual balance once in the Bible readings. He gave us lads all a good bit of advice. He says, remember and let the balance be Godward. Give God the benefit of the doubt. Don't fall to the other side. Fall to the side of God, to the side of right, to the side of holiness, to the side of righteousness. And maybe Daniel didn't know what to do. Maybe he felt he should do something to extricate himself from this situation. But he just did the right thing by God. You know, if you do the right thing by God, you can leave the rest with him. Oh, I tell you that, my friend, that's no carriage story. His continued intimacy with God, every day, every day, every day. He sought himself to please the Lord and to seek his face, and not only every day, but set days in chapter 10. 21 days he set himself to pray. Oh, my friend, I know you've all been at the travel agency, you're thinking about your holidays. Oh, I know that. This man set himself for 3 weeks to pray. 3 weeks to pray. To find out not his personal future. Not if he was going to be accepted or unaccepted or applauded or praised. But to find out what was to happen to his people in the latter days. And you know, in seeking that, he became a wreck. Falling on his face and on the palms of his hands, and ate no pleasant meat, and decorated not himself in any way. He was just a skeleton to find out the mind and will of God for his people. I want to ask you a question. Is there anyone in here? I feel the shame coming up the nape of my neck as I ask you. Is there anyone so interested in the little flock of God amongst you that you have any business like, you do any business like this? May God raise up not only preachers amongst us, but men that will seek the face of God for the future and blessing of his own dear people. My time is going on. Says someone, we never find any faults in Daniel. No, that's right. If you know any, well, we would like to hear them. But he had a common infirmity. He had a common infirmity with everyone else. He felt very, very weak. And he felt very, very weak when he was dealing with spiritual things. Just you watch the man that's arrogant in spiritual things. Watch the man that is just that little bit too competent. Well, I know there needs competence. Oh, my friend, in the things of God, this man had a weakness. And he had a fear. And that's why, at the end of this chapter, someone comes to touch him, and to strengthen him, and to lift him up. Maybe there is someone in here, and people think, well, they wouldn't need a little bit strengthened. They wouldn't need a little lift up. You know, my friend, the Lord knows all them that do need that. I was touching on that this morning just a little, about those two on the road to Emmaus. How the Lord just emerges out of the shadows and fallen step along the dusty road with them. and lifts their heart up by a presentation of his word and of himself, and then a revelation, and then a passing on. Haven't we often felt that as well? My dear souls, I feel this afternoon that life would be dreadfully drab and dull without this touch, without this visitation, without this feeling of his presence near, without this lifting up that we so badly need and so often need. And so he came and he touched him. Oh, he felt he was unfit to do anything worthwhile for Israel. He felt his meanness before such majesty. And I'm sure everyone that's genuine have feelings like that, as Daniel had. But God's ministry to Daniel is, fear not, be strong. Fear not, be strong. You see, it's because we have this body that we've heard about, so frail, so weak. Oh, my friend, we fear. Isn't it in the Gospel by Matthew, four times over, God is to speak to Joseph? In the length of two chapters, he is to appear to Joseph in a dream to encourage him to do the right thing. Isn't it seven times in the Gospel by Luke, all those fear nots, fear nots, fear nots, fear nots? You know, there's not a man or woman in here of any worth that hasn't dreaded the next day and will face the next circumstance. And you would hardly think that all these things I told you about Daniel, that Daniel would tremble, and Daniel would be afraid, and Daniel would be down, and Daniel would be discouraged. It says that when Paul came to Apiphorum, he saw the faces of the brethren, and he took courage. You know, my friends, even Elijah sat by the juniper tree. Elijah sat by the juniper tree. You ever read the words of Elijah? I am no better than my fathers. You ever come there? You ever felt like giving it all up? Ever felt it's not worthwhile? Ever felt you couldn't say anything to please everybody? I am no better. Ah, but it says, one came and touched Elijah. One come and touches Paul in the prison. One comes and touches. It's that touch that matters so much. It means everything. It means more than praise and acceptance. It means more than meetings and friends. That touch, that touch. His crowning glory, and I'll sit down. His crowning glory, from 18 until he's 100. There's a consistency in this man's life. A consistency in this man's life. Oh, my friend, isn't it the dread of our life that we bereft? Isn't it the dread of our lives that we might spoil or blot our copybook before the end? Aren't these words constantly with us? Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Oh, the crowning glory of this man's life, and it's this, his consistency throughout all his life. No ups and downs and fits and starts. Oh, the many people that will be in here, and one day they're up and the next minute down. And sometimes, when they're up, they want you to be up. And when they're down, they want you to be down. We used to have a grand old character about us, and he used to describe some brethren. He says they're either on the moon or on the midden. Yes. You see what I mean? Not this up and down. No, my friend, it's this steady, plodding, praying, consistent, going on with God that finds this divine approval. He had passed the test on the slippery slopes of his youth, and youthful life, and youthful lust, and youth has got its problems. Oh, how I would love to take all you young men and put my arms around you and just speak one or two little things into your ear that would help you, things that were problems to me. Oh, it's grand to get past the slippery slopes of youth. He has passed the prosperity test as well. He has passed the testing as well. He passed the test when he was a scholar. He passed the test as a prophet of God. He revealed the mind of God. He passed the test as a statesman. You know, king after king could not dispense with his services. Oh, how we could take that into the world of men. Not only so, hasn't he passed his test as a man of God? When I was a boy of 8, there used to be a little mission in our village. And I used to hear the children coming out of that little mission, the Band of Hope they called it. I used to hear them singing. I didn't know, it was all strange to me. They used to sing a little chorus, "Dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone." You know, I just thought it a lot of nonsense. But you know, as life has advanced, not that I would sing it, but I know what's meant now. Do you wonder, after a man of 18 years, when he comes on the scene, up till 100, passing all these tests, do you wonder that God said of him, "O man, greatly beloved"?